गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नूतिभिः सेधसादनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करभावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Next few classes, the Puranamadam, the Shanti Mantra for this one, I'll chant once the whole way through, the Vedic way, and then part by part, so you can chant along the second part, so you can learn with the intonation. Maybe in some class can show how, one time I can show you how you know the intonations like this. It's marked like they're in the mantra. So I'll chant once through, then part by part, so you can chant after me in the second time around. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. So actually, the Vedic texts, many of them will have the intonations, they call swaras, in the text itself. So if you have the text that we have for the, that I shared with the whole text of the Upanishad, if you'll see, both in the English and the Sanskrit, like Purnamada, under the first Purna, there's a line underneath. And then, this one is a very strange mantra. It doesn't have the, it only has the two low ones. Some other mantras, sometimes you'll see a line above, a vertical line above on the top, which this one doesn't have. That would be going up. So there are certain notations like this. This is unique. It only has one of the three swaras where there are other ones. Like usually we say shanti, shanti, shanti. It goes up. There's something to go up. And like we say sahana vavatu and we say ma vidvishava hai. That where it goes up in that way. There's a third way. And all those are the only three. And then you have them, you know, notations in this way. So that it said, they say Vedic mantras, it's best to chant in this way because part of the mantra is the actual swara, the intonation like this. That's what's said about it. So since we're studying the Upanishad itself, we'll learn the Vedic way of chanting this and chant it in the beginning in that way. So in any case, we've been giving a little bit of an introduction to Upanishad and this Upanishad in general. So we talked about the meaning of the Upanishad, right? How it's the knowledge, clear knowledge that can help shake our, you know, our vision, because it takes a little bit to shake it up. Shake the, what is holding me, what is binding me, shake it up, so clear our vision, and then totally, you know, break it. That's the idea. First to shake it up, and then to very clearly, you know, break this, break it, meaning wake you up. You know how the dream, a lot of the time the dream, there's something that comes there frightening or something that's there all of a sudden and it wakes you up. You know, some tiger, they always say tiger, I don't know why tiger, but there's something scary like that in the dream and that wakes you up. So they need something to give the push. So then the Upanishad, at the end, you know, end of the Veda, the end of the dream wakes you up. So the end of, to first shake you and then wake you up like this. So that's, so to wake us up to have clear vision like this. So this is what it does. And we spoke about a few other things last time also. Two of the main things we talked about. One is that the karma and jnana, according to Adi Shankara, when he's giving the introduction to this Upanishad, he says how they're diagonally opposite. Totally, they can't, they're not the same. And we said, in order to do any action, I need to be identified as a limited being, right? I need to have my panchakosha with me. Take away the panchakosha, how are you going to do any action, right? Even deep sleep, you took away the two koshas because the karana sharira or anandamaya kosha, this one, it's potential, so you're not doing any action at that time, right? So at that time, when you take those away, where is there any activity? Deep sleep, where is your activity? Mind is quiet, where is the activity? So you have to identify with something, some limited thing, in order to be within the realm of activity. So knowing is different. Knowing is there's no activity, it's just no knowledge. It's not, you know, we confuse knowing for other things, for other mental activities like thinking, right? Thinking is one of them, deciding, these kinds of things. So the manomaya or vijnanamaya kosha we can confuse there, but that's not knowledge. Thinking isn't knowledge. Knowledge, you don't need to think. Do you think when you see the you're sitting at the traffic light and it turns green, do you have to think, okay, from my recollection from the past, it's probably safe to go because it's green, and you don't need to think. It's knowledge. You just go, right? Somebody who's newer, you know, that might be a, you know, maybe not to this, maybe reading in a language, like we're learning Sanskrit, some of the people. Especially somebody who's newer to the language, they're just learning the alphabet. If it's with something newer to you, you have to think, is that a va or is it a ba? Is that E or E? A lot of times the E and O, people get confused in the sensor because one does the full arch and one a partial arch. So what is it? So we have to think. But then when you're fluent in the language, you don't think, you just know. So knowledge is different than thinking, than the mental activity like this. Knowledge is just, you know, it's firsthand. But in any case, in order to be a karta, a doer, then I need to have an instrument. I need to identify with the limited part of the whole thing, like this. That's the whole idea they have in an arbitrator, be it in a court, right, like a judge, be it in a sports match. The referee is supposed to be, you know, supposed to not take sides, meaning they're not a doer and they're not part of the game. They can't be, you know. Doesn't mean they have zero biases. It's, as a human, very difficult not to do that. And there are places where there are certain places where the referee in sports games has to lean to one side or they'll be in trouble in certain rural places or whatever. But the idea is, yes, not involved like this, because that's a different, being part of the game and being the referee are two different things. You can't be both. So this way, he says, you can't do both. So that's one of the reasons he's bringing up, first of all, for us to understand what, you know, what Upanishad is, what Jnana Yoga is talking about, because it's not something that we do, and nothing to do with activity. It's about knowing what's there. Science, in order to understand, you know, later they put into some practical thing, fine, but really, it's the directing science, I'll know. It's in order to, they want to know. So there's a the difference between order to understand that there's karma kanda and jnana kanda, because in the Vedas he gives in the introduction, one of the main reasons is people want to lump everything together under one header. The Upanishad says no, they're two very distinct sections. One is talking about action, one is talking about knowledge, and they're not the same thing. You can't. Well, the first one is a very good preparation for the second, but it isn't. They are different. They're different things. It's not going to be the same thing. So this is what he wanted to clarify in this. And then we discussed about they're different. When we talk about action, we just lump a batch of things together. So what is an activity? He said, you do something. What is it that's being done? So I said, so when they analyze action, they said there are four different things, as we said last time. You can create something, take things, mix them, make something new out of them, upadyam. Like you bake a cake, right? You take some ingredients and mix them, something new came out. Upadyam is one. Vikaryam, you change something. Where that one thing you just change. You change the form of it. You know, an artist takes a lump of clay and makes something nice out of it. They just change. Really, it's adding name and form, or it goes through a metamorphosis, like, you know, every few weeks I make yogurt. So the milk goes through a metamorphosis like this. So you change it. Another one is apyam, you get something. Meaning, I worked very hard, so because of that, they gave me extra vacation time. Now I can go to Hawaii, or I can go to Uttarkashi, you know, now virtually, but next year we'll go in person. And, so I get somewhere. Both I got the vacation time because I worked hard, I got bonus. So I achieved something, right? Or I went there, so I got to the place. Because achieving can be whether physically you get something like this or whether you go, you know, you move and get there. So really it's achieving in time or space like this. And the last one is samskaryam, where you purify, right? Things are mixed. We go to the garden, we bring our vegetables inside. And then the vegetables are mixed with, you know, some dirt and dust, and little friends sometimes come in with them that I have to go and put them back outside because, you know, let them live nicely out there, and so we have to. So the action is purifying. So really separating what is the object, what is something else. So these are the activities. All activities fall under these. Anything you do will do these things, but. Jnanam isn't any of these. Of course, you'll say in a subtle way, it's, you know, viveka is kind of like, you know, separating. So viveka would be some sort of subtle activity, the mental action, because anything within the realm of body, mind, mean world is activity. So thinking is activity. But knowledge itself isn't activity, especially the knowledge that we're talking about here. Other type of knowledge, you'll say maybe something. You'll say it is apyam. Before I didn't know, you know, I didn't know any Sanskrit. Now I know some Sanskrit, so I did achieve something, let's say. So there is that type of knowledge. Any type of worldly knowledge will have some subtle kind of activity, yes, mental activity. But this one is different. So we introduced last week the two different types of things. An action to get. One is for, I do an action for sadhya vastu, for something that I obtain. And all worldly activity will be like this. I do an action in order to get something. Sadhya means something to obtain, something to get, right? Something to it's not here now, right? The clean vegetable isn't here now. Where the clean clothes aren't here now. After the action, they become like that. The cake isn't here now. I have ingredients. Some action is doing that, like this. So my understanding of this isn't here now. Okay, it is some sort of mental activity, but then to obtain something, yes. The other type of thing is siddhavastu, obtaining what's already there. And this one, you're not really obtaining anything. So it's not really you're going and getting something. And actually, that's one of the issues that we have is that we're always wanting, we're looking for something, we're looking for our happiness, contentment, our peace, And we think it's a sadhyavastu. Sadhyavastu meaning something I'm going to go and get somehow. And we do get it, little glimpses, but then those glimpses last for a very short time. You know, we do get some security and some joy from things of the world, but real contentment, it slips away all the time. If we'd get something and really give us the security contentment, we wouldn't be looking for anything else. We'd just be there. But it doesn't work. You know, we've tried and it hasn't worked. And if you ask almost anybody, if they'll sincerely tell you, then, you know. So Swami Dayananji, when he explains about the need for Vedanta, he says like this, that if you ask somebody, how are you doing? Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm okay in this. Then why do they need Vedanta? They're doing fine. He says, yes. They'll say that. But if you really talk to them, after a little while, whoever it is, you really find, very good, I'm very happy. If you're, everybody's fine, everything's okay. Then after a little while, when they start really opening their heart, yeah, everything's okay, except, you know, my mother-in-law's really not well in this. She just got better then, you know, like this. Or, you know, because of this, with the COVID and this, I'm really scared what it'll be because, you know, because I already have some health conditions. So if I get it, so I'm really not sleeping well because of this. So even when I say everything is great, okay, fine, still there is shaky ground underneath it, you know, like living on the fault. There's a fault underneath that we're afraid is going to erupt at some point like this. A previous coworker of mine, he lives in Hayward, so I used to tell him I have to get him a t-shirt that says, I'm from Hayward, but it's not my fault. So we have a fault, we have a shaky fault underneath all the time, like we're like this. So in this case, so this is what happens. So the siddhavastu, it's something that's already there, meaning the example I gave, if I had my glasses sitting on top of my head like I did last time, I have a chain on my other ones that's sitting here. So those I can hang, these I can just put up here. And then I say, I want to read the verse. What happened? Where am I? Did anybody see my glasses? Right? Like this. And looking. And what you, I don't need to obtain them. I just as he pointed out to me, you just say, oh, they're on your head. And I'll say, oh, they're here. Okay. So just the words pointed out, they point out, and then I'm not obtaining anything new. Because the thing is, anything, any sadhyavastu, anything you obtain, tomorrow can be unobtained. So this is one of the things that Vedanta is saying. If you think moksha, liberation, being free from everything, is something that comes in time, in conditions, then it can also get lost in time and condition. Just like that vacation. Okay, I'll go to Uttarkashi if I'm a spiritual aspirant. I'll go to Hawaii if I want to just go on vacation. But then what'll happen after 3 weeks? When my, you know, if I don't show up for work the next day, then, you know, they'll try to contact me. A week later, if I didn't come back, then they'll say, well, what to do? He's AWOL and we're going to find somebody else. So then I'll lose my job, and also I can't stay there for good because they'll say, your credit card is declined, you know, because I could only pay so much. So then they'll say, bye-bye, you have to leave. So anything you obtain in time will go with time. I remember about a decade ago, Nepal. We have some good Nepali friends. Some of you guys know Meera Bhabhi always comes and cooks whenever we have any events. So somebody that they all knew well, some scholar, I think he was teaching at UC Berkeley, very sharp mind, very knowledgeable in certain field and everything. You know, he got old. I don't know if it was Alzheimer's or what it is, but then suddenly his, you know, mind isn't functioning like it was. So what he obtained in knowing things, gone, also gone like this. So all these things, whatever is a sadhyavastu that I can get, will go. Right? This body is siddha or sadhya. I got it through my karmas and then through my past karmas. So, and when that karma is finished, then I also have to, it'll also go back, right? I can't take it with me like this. So those are the two. Now what happens then is sadhyavastu, something to obtain, First of all, before I have it, it's going to be paroksha, right? Paroksha meaning not something immediate, right? That I can immediately see, you know, maybe I do see it in the window, but it could also be like, you know, the vacation example. I don't see the place or this, but it's something that potential could be there. And maybe you say, well, it's something I wanted to make money and buy. I see the Tesla, you know, now they made Teslas, you know, not as much as a house, but as much as an apartment. But I want to get the one that costs like a house, the $100,000 car. So I see it in the window and this, yes, I can go to the car shop and see it. And then after I work hard and save money, I can go and get it. Then I see it, but it's still a little distant, meaning it's not right here. It's still there behind the glass I can't get. But in any case, it's something there. Then it can become, so I don't get, once I get it becomes, you know, pratyaksha, right in front, like this. Because especially something that through one of these activities, the cake example. You bake the cake, can you see it before? No, it's still a paroksha. I went to my friend YouTube in order to know how to make it, and I learned, and then he told me, or she told me, and then I learned how to do, and now, so it was paroksha, now pratyaksha, now becomes directly. Now, the siddhavastu though, the siddhavastu is going to always be the aparoksha. I remember, this in other classes we talked, but just briefly, these three terms are very important in what we discuss. We have pratyaksha. Right? Pratyaksha means something available to the senses. Something. And the thing is, these are all, this means a type of knowledge. There's a type of now pratyaksha jnana, meaning knowledge. Through what? Through, there needs to be a means for knowledge. Knowledge isn't, you say, it's red. How do you know? Because I see it. You need to see in order to know it's red, right? What was the color of the atmosphere 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago in your town? It was red. It felt like I was on Mars, right? How do I know? I saw it. If you didn't see, how would you know that it looked like it's Mars here? You wouldn't know. So, meaning that no knowledge directly through the senses. Because you need, again, a means for knowledge. Without the means, how are you going to tell? I know the president is in the hospital. How do you know? I was there. I saw him got on the helicopter. I see him go to the hospital. Like this. You know, I saw the news. I saw. Like this. So, in this way. Then paroksha. Paroksha is something I know, but not through the senses. Meaning, same example, you don't listen to the news, right? Let's say. And I tell you, the president is in the hospital, he has coronavirus. Now, you'll say that, and you'll trust what I say, because why would I not tell you the truth in this? You know, if it's somebody else saying something, you might not trust. But a trustworthy person says, you'll say, oh yeah, okay. You know, like New York Times wrote it and BBC says, and they just say, yeah, it sounds like that's probably what's happening. So you didn't see actually, but you heard it, right? So then, paroksha jnanam, you know, but not indirect knowledge, so it's through some other thing. Now what happens, here's one interesting thing with it. For paroksha jnanam, you need data for it. Without data, how is that going to happen? Like, for instance, the news like this we just said, that news. You need pratyaksha first. Somebody sees, hears, and from that, the information comes. You know, without that, what is it based on? It's just based on ideas without any ground to it, some imagination. Imagination isn't knowledge, it's, you know, some vague thing. So in this way, so it'll always be based on this. Without that, it's... So we do have subtle things in the mind, subtle math in this, but those things, they started basing from seeing things in the world, counting, whatever. But in any case, so this one meaning, so through the mind, through anumana, right? Through through inference, through different way, different mental processes like this, I can infer that, you know. Like the classic example, where there's fire, there's smoke. Say, there's fire, you know, I call the fire department, there's a big fire. Did you see the fire? No. Why are you calling us? Well, there's a lot of smoke. So in this way, you didn't see the fire, but you saw the smoke. So these are working for the worldly things. What happens, though, for self-knowledge, these guys won't do it. These two types of knowledge won't do it for the siddhavastu, for what's already obtained, because this one is based on pratyaksha, on information from senses, right? It's based on that. Even that they're calculating things from other galaxies and, you know, these amazing things that the astronomers are figuring out, the physicists are figuring out nowadays, even that. They're calculating all these things, figuring out, but it's on observation. They observe certain levels of radiation, observing some things with the light. So it is based on that. It's based on pratyaksha first and then the calculation. If there wasn't any of that, how would they calculate? It's kind of like the scientists will say, well, you say there's heaven. Give me some proof for it. You'll say, well, did you see it or this? How can I see with my senses? So then they'll say, well, you can't see with the senses. How am I going to say? Were these all these other things? Yes, we're saying there's information so I can see. Like this. So the siddhavastu, the atma, the aparoksha jnanam, the last one, aparoksha, so aparoksha jnanam is when this was put together, they took mercy on us. Instead of saying apratyaksha aparoksha, they said aparoksha, because paroksha takes pratyaksha into it too. So neither of them, you know, no, not through senses, not through mind, not through inference. Aparoksha. Now what happens in this one, you're using the senses. In this one, you're using the mind. Is it clear enough, or there's too much light on the board to read? I can't tell.
Yeah, but aparoksha.
Now it's easier to read now. Hmm.
No, there's still.
You don't have pratyaksha pramanam, you can't read it. If you say paroksha jnanam, it's the knowledge. Pramanam is the means of knowledge. So let's do it like this. Now up to now you had paroksha jnanam. Paroksha jnanam, because you heard, you didn't see it, but I told you about it. Now you can read it. So now you have pratyaksha pramanam. Now through the senses, you can read. Pratyaksha, paroksha, and then aparoksha we just got to, aparoksha. Pratyaksha, paroksha, still on there, yeah, paroksha, aparoksha. So aparoksha, immediate knowledge, there's no medium. Here there's medium of senses, medium of mind, but there's no medium, immediate. Now we'll get a little more light, because we can read it already. Okay. So what happens then is, this is what Vedanta is talking about. The reason atmajnanam, self-knowledge, doesn't fall within these is, again, the second one, paroksha, or here paroksha, depends on pratyaksha. You need data. You need data from the senses. What data from the senses do you have about yourself as consciousness? It's not there. That's not where the data is. You can't get it from there. So then, because of that, this isn't something that you can get through the senses or through the mind like this. It's not data that comes from there. Because if it came from sense information, we'd know it like this. So this is one of the tricky things in Vedanta, in studying this. Studying anything subtle already, you know, the more subtle, the less obvious it is, but then when you get to this most subtle and something that you can't get from inference or you can't get it from senses, then what are you going to do? So here, that's why we say this knowledge, as we mentioned in the last class, is apaurusheya, not something humanly, not something that is conjured from the human mind. Because the human mind can only, these two things, that one can't be from this, because otherwise it would be something that can be limited within the mental activity. And actually, there are a lot of things that human mind can't grasp. Like when we say infinite, we can't grasp infinite. We just think of something very large, very expansive. But we can't. Infinite is something the mind cannot grasp because it's not wired for it. Because it's, how are you going to grasp it? You say, not this. Yes, it's not with the form. Okay, good. Not with the limit. But that's not grasping it. That's just understanding some things what it's not. Not what it is. Vedanta is more negation in the end, like this. Because to negate all the stuff in the mind that gets in the way, and then you just abide as it. So the thing is, because before your mind, before you are a mind, before you're a body, you are your consciousness. This small exercise we gave in the Thursday class is a very wonderful exercise for this. When you just wake up in the morning, try this. It's very, very good. Because what happens is, when you wake up, you were in dream or deep sleep. Especially if you're coming right from deep sleep and waking up, it works the best. But it works anytime. When you just get up, before you just get up, turn off alarm clock and do whatever it is. Best without alarm clock, you wake up naturally for this. There's no jolt to the system like that. Before anything, just sit quietly and observe. Because what happens is, you're coming out of the dream, so you're not in the deep sleep or the dream state, and you're not quite in the waking state yet. You know, in between, you're just getting up. What's the first thing is, I am. I am, I know, right? Satchit is there. Afterwards, then, okay, there's me and there's the world. And then me and the world, and I have to be up by this time, be at this place, and what's happening in the news because this big thing happened yesterday, on and on starts going. It happens very fast, of course, instantaneously, but if you take a little while and just observe, I'm there, I am, and then afterwards you get into the other thing, it shows you that place, you know, that's my direct experience. The other things, I need the mind and senses in order to show me, yes, there's a world, and there's, I can feel this part, I can feel, but this part I can't feel right here, right? So then the one that I feel, that'll be me. The one that I don't feel is not me. Now, there are parts here I don't feel, but it's connected to it, so I'll say it's me, right? And I start, you know, on that one idea, part is me, part is not me, then I start expanding the whole thing. But before that, there's just I am and I know. The mind, you don't need the mind for it, it's you just experience, you know it directly. That's a paroksha, you know. But the other stuff, I'm so caught up in it, takes over very fast. So the siddhavastu we're talking about, that which is already obtained, is, meaning the Atma, myself, the conscious being, I know immediately. Everything else, there is some information to help me, some from the mind or from the body. So just like I will say, the fact that I am, the fact that I exist, the fact that I know, I don't need anything to prove it to me. I know, I don't have a question. There's no, you don't need body, mind, it's just obvious. Because when you just wake up, you know, before roll, before thoughts, anything. So it doesn't have to do with body or mind, regardless body or mind, yes or no. Because the analysis we give also is in the deep sleep. When you wake up, you know you were there, but you didn't think of, but body, mind, you didn't identify with that, and they weren't in the purview of your experience, but you existed. So this is showing this, and this is the thing is, this is the only thing which is in the realm of aparoksha jnanam. Everything else has some instrument. You need some instrument in order to experience it. even how I feel is much closer. I feel a little down today, or I feel more excited today. Even that one, there's some mechanism which I'm seeing and experiencing it. I feel the excitement. I feel the, you know, the mind being a little bit low like this, right? So I am feeling something. So there's still, there is some space between me and that. It's the same. The I'm excited, I'm depressed, still I. Same way. Satchit still there, same one. So this is about this knowledge. It's what is already there. And what is already there, beyond doubt, actually, right? We said that in the Upanishad, nishchaya, without a doubt. This is the only thing we've no doubt about. You can't doubt. You can't doubt about it no matter what. Everything else you can have some question, some doubt about, so many things. But this one, how can you doubt? If you say, I don't exist, what does it mean? It doesn't make sense. You say, I don't know anything. How do you, somebody will say, I don't know anything. You'll tell them, meaning I don't know, right? You'll say, okay, how do you know that you don't know anything? You have to be a conscious being to know that. The stone can't tell you I don't know anything. Just by saying that means I know something. I know how to say it. I know some language to say it. I can understand some language. So I know something. And I know that my knowledge is limited, so I don't know anything like this. So the base is Satam Chit regardless, and that I don't need anything else to show. So this is what it's talking about. When we go into this one. So again, the sadhya vastu, sadhya, something to be obtained, something, thoughts, information, senses helps to prove it. The siddha vastu, what's already there, you cannot use any, nothing can prove it. It can just be pointed out to you. The story we had of the 10th boy last week, that one exactly points out you're the 10th one. So this one points it out. You need some, so it has to be pointed out to me. This is, you are this. Because it's just unclear. Somebody points it out, helps to clarify that. That's the idea, how this works. So in this way. So in the 10th boy story that we had last week, I'm sure we all recall that, then what happens is, after there's the confusion, right? He forgets to count himself, so he's counting everybody else. And what happens then is they're all emotional, all this. So first of all, they're not just standing still, right? They're boys, they're out playing, and they're going to be running and jumping, hard to count. And then emotional because I can't see. So this is the whole idea, how I'm so caught up in things of the world. How am I going to look into this? All this, so the mind and senses and emotions and all the ideas are running around. There isn't the clarity to look at it. So there needs to be some stability to really look at it. If the mind is too chaotic, how am I going to do it? I want to sit here and inquire into myself, but I'm very worried about the political situation, or I'm worried about the pandemic, then my mind will always be racing to that. And it doesn't mean you don't need to deal with the worldly things. Nobody says we don't have to, but we need to. We have time to eat, right? There's a pandemic, there is political chaos, but we eat, we sleep, we take care, we work. So we put time for that and do it. So what? This is also something we can put some time into do, which we're doing. So like this. So it's, so this has to be, and things have to be then, or some organized and clear thinking is needed. That's how when the old man comes and he says, okay, first of all, some trust, some shraddha in them. I know where the 10th boy is, so some shraddha, that's the whole idea. Yes, there's one Ishvara, there's a God, he's loving you, taking care. He's creator, he's your father, and this gives some shraddha, some faith. It's not true. The old man found that, knows where the 10th boy is. He knows that. But for them to listen first, as a preparation, making sure, okay, listen, I can help you. So in this way, the trust is built like this. So in this way, and then look at an organized way, has them stay in one line. Okay, just stand in one line, I'll show you like this, in order to make it very clear. So the, as we say, the karmakanda prepares very well, because first of all, even when rituals are done with the desire mind, let me do this so that I can go to the heavens, so that we do for ritual for this, still it is, I'm doing ritual, I'm believing something greater than just this, you know, the limitedness of activities that I'm going through here, right? So already takes me to have some faith, something greater. This is how it starts. Then slowly understanding further that it's for purification of the mind and for understanding what's really behind it. In the Mantra Samhita, it would be just maybe the worship. But then in the later portion, Brahmanas and Aranyakas, the later portions of the Veda, it explains more the meaning of the mantra and everything, so that looking more subtle, so it helps to prepare the mind. This is the whole idea, how the structure is in the Veda. So it's the preparation. So then afterwards we can look into the essence like this. So this is how this whole thing works, we can say. So the whole preparation that's done, the main reason for it is that, you know, just like we said, setting the ground, the stage, so it's ready for the inquiry. Kind of like you want to do an experiment in the laboratory, you need to have the laboratory be in the right condition in order to really do the experiment. If it's not in the right condition, right, you're doing some physics experiment, look, like they do in Europe, in CERN, how much work they had to do to have everything be right so they can study certain things there, certain things that they couldn't otherwise. So we call this Antakarana Shuddhi. The purification of the inner instrument, purification of mind. All the other, the karma yoga, bhakti yoga, raja yoga, all these things, or karma upasana, if you want to call it like this, both the upasana is raja yoga, bhakti yoga. Those are for antakarana shuddhi, for purification of the mind, so it's prepared. So the mind is not as distracted by things. So the mind doesn't have as much negativity, in which is pulling away and making my vision unclear. So then my attention is more subtle. So these three things, it helps. The mala, purifying the mind, vikshepa, the tossing of the mind, and also making the attention more subtle. Because the intellect is focusing on such subtlety that it has to slowly get into it. Like if you listen, you know, classical music, whether Western Indian classical music, if you just start listening, you know a little bit, but if you keep going further, there's more and more subtlety to it. Like I'll hear somebody singing in this, I'll say, oh, pretty nice. And my wife will say, no, they're not exactly on in this, because she's professional in it, so she can tell the subtlety with me. I can't tell that subtlety to the same extent. So this takes a very subtle vision. So all this preparation helps. Study Vedanta helps all, you know, it helps with slowly honing on the subtlety too, for sure, like this. So one more thing we'll bring up in this introduction, then we'll move on after to the text itself. One other technical thing in Vedantic texts in general, in the Upanishad it doesn't necessarily do it. It's hard to read there. Maybe this will be better. Easier to read, huh? We don't like natural light, only the, we want electric. If PG&E will be happy we're using them. So in any case, if you'll see in like when somebody like Adi Guru Shankara is giving the introduction, he will usually cover this. Upanishad itself, not necessarily, because it doesn't go through the structure that we usually do with things, but other texts, the Prakarana Granthas we study, like the Driktisha Viveka, these other ones, they have certain points that they give at the beginning which are accepted in order to clarify some things about the text. These are like four qualifications, four qualities they're giving to at the beginning of a text, kind of like if you were to read a scholarly paper. They're going to, in the introduction, they're going to give some things about it to clarify, first of all, who is it for? Because you're studying something in biochemistry, but this is studying something in genetics where you're studying viruses or something. So you read what is the subject matter, who is it really for? If it's more of a medical thing, more of a, you know, more something more for whatever other type of, you know, scientist is looking at it. So you know who it's for. So certain things like this will be given at the beginning of the scholarly paper as an introduction, what it is, who it's for, so that way you know it's for you, or if you need more background before you study it, they'll say in there, maybe in the paper, you know, before you can study, you know, this is based on these and these ideas, so if you don't know those ideas, you're going to want to study them first and then study that, because otherwise it won't make sense to you, the paper. Where I work, probably the top publisher in the world of scientific review papers, annual reviews. And so there, I've taken a few of the articles and tried to read, but, you know, it's for graduate students in certain fields that are written by top people in the field. So I get lost. I can't, it's not for me. So so I know it's not for me. So in any case, what happens here then, there's these four qualifications which Shankara in his introduction to his Upanishad touches on. So we'll say what they are and then we'll explain about it for Vedanta study. So these are called Anubandha Chatushtaya. Tell me if the red, can we read the red? You can read or it's hard to read red. Yeah, so good. Red for English, Liz. Anubandha Chatushtaya. So these are fourfold. Chatushtaya means fourfold. So fourfold qualities that we give to it, that is given at the beginning of a text in order to clarify. So the first one is adhikari. Adhikari, this means qualified student. Who is qualified to study this? Because again, you know, different texts, you're going to need a different background preparation before studying it. So this is one. Who is this text meant for? That's the first one. Second one is Vishaya. Keep it open. Oops. Vishaya means the subject matter, what's being discussed in that text. Right. Third one, Prayojana. This is, what is the end result? What is it for, right? it's written for a certain reason. So what's the end result for? So in the paper they'll say, right, this is in order to prove that, you know, with this much of material you can get this much of energy from the sun, and so you can, you know, with this much material, this much effort, you can get, you know, 100 houses can be have a yearly supply of energy. Like, this is a scientific paper. And the fourth is sambandham, I believe. That's the term. Yes, sambandham. There we go, sambandham. Sambandham is the connection between Vishaya and Prayojana, between the subject matter and, you know, what is to be obtained by it. So it could be, you know, like about that, you know, that, okay, if you want to make that much energy from the solar thing, that's the subject matter is you can get good, you know, you can get a lot of energy from the solar, from the subject matter is, you know, photovoltaics. The goal is you can get this much, maybe twice as much energy as we are. And then how do you do? Well, you need to understand these things. You need these materials. You need to put them together in this way and certain process, and then it can be done like this. So it's going to be how do these two connect, really? What is connecting the two? Usually some sort of activity you have to do or something you have to understand in order to do it, like this. So these are the fourfold, the fourfold qualities that will be given in order to introduce a text. So what happens is, when you look at Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda, all of these are going to be very different. That's why they're not lumped together. Meaning, first Adhikari. If for me to do Karma Kanda, whether a ritual or activity, meaning I want to get something, right? Even if it's I want to, you know, I pray for everybody, or I do an activity in order to help to serve people, still, meaning I see myself as desirous of something. So it's based on some sort of desire. I have to be a desirer to do that. I want to get to something, to some result. Like this. Even when it's done for the most, you know, selfless reason, even when it's done for my own mental purification, like this, still, you know, I do it in order to purify my mind, in order to purify the environment. Still, that has to be for the Karma Kanda, like this. In Jnana Kanda, one has to be more vairagi, has to not have desire, drop the desires. Some people say vairagya, right? This is going to be another desire to, you know, be free, desire not to have desires. You can say like this. Some people say, well, that's desire too. But it really is very much the opposite. Because what happens, it takes away all the other ones. It meaning, I desire not to have desires, meaning I desire to get rid of this whole idea of desire, meaning being bound by things what is desire means. I want to get to a certain place, then things will be okay. Means vairagya is, it's okay now. Okay, I'll do some service, I'll do some things to help, but I'm not it. But internally, I'm okay now, like this. In this way, they're very different. The person who, the adhikari for karma, the adhikari for jnana are very different. One has to, you know, have desire, one has to have less, or, you know, not have the same type of desire, we could say. Then the vishaya, what is it that one is trying to get? When you do an action, the result is going to be some limited result. I want to help cure people from a certain disease, like now, scientists working on it. It's for that. They're going to save. That's great. So you're going to make everybody always happy? No, no, no. You're going to make people all educated? No, no, no. I'm trying to make a medicine so that everybody can not get sick from this virus. Like this. It can be a big thing like that or a small thing that I work hard to get the car. Or, you know, I walk down to the store to enjoy something because I like to eat that type of food or wear that type of clothes. But still, it's going to be a limited thing. The vishaya of jnana yoga is not limited. Moksha isn't something limited, unlimited. So one is for a limited act, one is for something limited, one for something unlimited. So very different. Even though I think that the action will get me to something unlimited, it's not something unlimited. Like some people think, I'll go to the heaven and they're unlimited, but that doesn't make sense. If it's a different location and place, space and time, meaning after I die, then I go to this place, well, you're still talking about a certain, you know, movement and location. That can't be unlimited. It doesn't make sense. So that's like this. Then prayojana, the means, right? So the means for karma kanda is karma. Jnana kanda is jnana. Right? Well, actually, vishaya prayojana is the end that I want to get to also. I mix those two up, right? Let me just see. It is. What I said before was real for prayojana. What is the goal? I got the vishaya prayojana backwards. Before we said the goal. So limited and not. And also the one thing, prayojana for the jnana, for the karma, it'll be artha, kama, dharma. These three are going to be the goals that I can do with karma kanda. Where jnana kanda, it's moksha. Again, we're not saying none of these things, karma isn't good, but they're for antakarana shuddhi, for the purification of the mind. So it can be, you know, I can see things clearly. That's what it's for. It's not for an end. It's not for an end in itself. It's for preparation of the mind. So like this. The vishaya, one of them is talking about some limited thing, swarga, heaven, so I can get to there. That's a limited, for some limited thing. For nitya vastu, for something limited, the vishaya of one is a limited thing. An interesting thing is, in a lot of the prayers they have, different prayers are there, different stotrams. At the end, it has, the last verse usually has what they call palashruti. Palashruti means, what are the results you get for doing this worship, repeating it this many times or whatever. So you'll go to heaven, or sarva shatru vinashanam, all your enemies will be destroyed. Different things they say. You're going to go to the heaven, you're going to be with your deity, all these things. And a lot of them after it says, labatecha moksham. And on top of these, you also get moksha. It's kind of like saying, you'll be fed, you're going to get a very good meal today, and you're never going to be hungry. Well, never be hungry means you're going to get this too. So why that they put at the end of the list? Two reasons. One is the palashruti is just so, okay, it's going to do something good, let me do it, to encourage. More than that, I will actually get that. That's one thing. And then if somebody understands about the moksha, they'll say, yes, okay, it can get to moksha if you do it, and it helps to purify the mind. And then you learn to look into what's really behind everything. Ishava samidam sarvam, as we'll start that one consciousness in and through pervading everything, as we'll start studying this Upanishad. Yeah, then you'll get to. So it's like first day in first grade, you'll say, yes, and you do this exercise well, you can become a doctor or a lawyer or a scientist. It's true. But there'll be a few more steps. But in any case, so the vishaya, what is the subject matter? One is some limited thing. One is an unlimited thing, like this. This is the between the two difference. And sambandham, what is connects them, also different. For karma kanda, it's an action, right? I have to be karta. I have to be doer. I have to be bhokta, I have to be enjoyer for karma kanda. You can say maybe, not necessarily booked out. Let somebody else enjoy it, right? I'm working in the hospital, taking care of people, volunteer this. Okay, so I'm not getting anything, they're getting from. Okay, good. Well, first of all, I get my clean conscience, I feel good about, so there is something. And even if it's totally selfless, still for somebody to be the bhokta. So let somebody else be the bhokta enjoyer. So it's more, you know, a much more noble activity, yes. But still, it's, I'm doer, karta, and there's bhokta. There's doership and enjoyership. They always go together. You can't, they're be bound together. You do an action in order to have a certain experience result. And the result triggers you to do more action, whether to repeat it, or enhance it, or keep it, or get rid of it. I don't want this here, I want to move on to something else. This is disturbing me. So then they're caught up. Where jnana yoga, it's jnana, it's knowledge, self-knowledge. It's not, the means is knowing, is knowledge. Means is not action. Again, preparation, yes, action needed, but the actual knowledge isn't. So in this way, the whole background of what the text is for, who it's for, is also different. Between when a text is teaching one of these, the text or teaching of it or any one of these, they're very different. So in this way, actually just to become an adhikari for this, it really, they say mumukshu, somebody really wants liberation, it takes a lot of understanding, right? Because people, I've seen with my own eyes, people coming to, because I've gone around Swami Ram Swarupanandaji, and in India where people are more familiar with these teachings. So visiting people, and they'd say, oh, Swamiji, we want moksha, give us moksha. He says, do you know, what is moksha? Do you understand what moksha is? What is this that you want? It's because just to understand moksha, what is it we're talking about, takes a lot, because it's not some event I want to do this much and then get somewhere, that's people's idea, but it's what's always there, just recognizing, you know, my glasses were already on my head. My atma is always there, unlimited, it's just I wasn't aware of it because I'm caught up in other stuff. So in this way, this understanding has to be there in order to really look into it in this way. So all sadhanas, all practices I do, I should understand what it's for. What is the reason for it, just like a medicine I take for a certain reason, for purifying my mind, karma yoga and this, selflessness in order, you know, break the mala, the different purities, my own mind, because they're not letting me see clearly in there. I'm caught up in all sorts of nonsense because of that. And then my mind is unstable in this. Okay, upasana, raja yoga, bhakti yoga, helping to make the mind more stable like this. And then what is the root problem? What's binding me? Actually, what's, as we go into jnana yoga, what seems to be binding me? Then the vichara, the Vedanta inquiry does this. So that's how they're, you know, the clarity on this is very important in when we look into this. So this is all the introduction we're going to do for this. All this background will help us now when we're looking into the text itself, because now we know, you know, who is the adhikari, what is this? This is what the shoes we're going to fill is, that I want to know, right? Self-knowledge, what's behind. And what is it that isn't limited? Because I see myself as limited being. Why am I not limited being, right? Why is it like this? Why are the other things? So it helps to point these things out. And this Upanishad, although being terse and being, the words are a little convoluted, not clear, that really the commentary is needed for it. But it does show you both. It does explain both of these, which is unique. Usually they'll talk just about the jnana kanda. So it'll explain also how some about the karma kanda as a preparation for jnana, which is a nice thing within this Upanishad. So from next week, we'll start the Upanishad proper, now that we've done this background. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.